Hi, it's Joe Lowry. Today on the Global Lithium Podcast, I have part two with Dean Frankel of Solid Power. We build off episode one and continue to talk about Solid Power's development of solid state batteries. We get into more details on the components of the cell and the potential for significantly higher energy density in batteries. We review lithium intensity. We talk about changes to raw material requirements that solid state battery implementation would require. And I think it's going to be another interesting episode for people that like to get some specifics on technology. Along the way, we also talk about the recent news stories that both BYD and Tesla will be coming out with LFP battery packs that are designed differently to get around some of the issues with implementing LFP and longer range EVs. Dean gives us his thoughts on both of those two companies' efforts. And we also get into GM's recent announcement of their new NMCA technology, and Dean gives you his thoughts on some of what might be design challenges for that type of battery, especially not doing what Tesla does with the smaller cells. So I think that's all going to be very interesting, and we have a very interesting response to the final rapid fire question. So without further ado, I'm going to move over to the conversation with Dean, and then I'm going to follow up with a couple of comments about the stock market situation vis-a-vis the coronavirus and the oil price crash. So with that, Dean Frankel. The Global Lithium Podcast is back with Mr. Dean Frankel of Solid Power. For those of you who have already listened to episode one, you've got Dean's backstory. The millennial worried about being flooded out in South Florida and how that led him on his sojourn to solid state batteries. So if you didn't get it and you're interested, check out episode one, but we're just going to kind of get into it here. Dean, last time you had the opportunity to talk a bit about how Solid Power's architecture works. Would you like to go through that in a little more detail this time, since we are not doing a trailer, we're actually doing a real episode this time?
You got it. It was the world's longest trailer, brought to you by Zoom, which should be sponsoring your podcast given the coronavirus impacts for telecommuting and video conferencing. So thank you, Zoom.
Shout out to Zoom for free.
Yeah, well, we'll plug them this time, and then in future episodes, hopefully they'll be a real sponsor.
Okay. This is called podcast karma. All right, yeah. So let's talk about the solid state, solid power world and how that's going to work.
Yep. So high level refresher, solid state, we remove a liquid electrolyte. In our system, we remove a liquid electrolyte. We replace that with a solid electrolyte. That is what solid state means. There are many types of solid state batteries. Solid Power works in sulfides. So we are, it is a sulfur containing solid electrolyte material. Really good ionic conductivity, which makes our jobs a little bit easier here. On the cathode side, we work with traditional NMC 622 cathodes. By and large, you look at the cathode, it looks pretty similar to lithium ion with one major exception, which is that we are blending what we call our catholyte, so our solid electrolyte in the cathode, tailored to the cathode's properties. that is blended in with the cathode active material particles, coated, densified together. So if you look at a cross section, you do see a larger percentage of volume dedicated to making sure you always have a cathode particle in contact with the electrolyte. So that's the cathode side. Moving towards the anode, we have a separator material. Our separator is also an electrolyte. So it has a really important dual function. It gets rid of a plastic separator, it gets rid of a liquid electrolyte. In order to do that, it has to conduct ions and insulate electrons, because you don't want to short the cell in between the cathode and the anode. And then lastly, on the anode side, is a lithium metal anode. So we can use graphite or silicon, but to get the benefits of energy density with the solid state chemistry, you really want to use lithium metal. So NMC622, but all up to 85% nickel, can be used on the cathode side, maybe even higher than 85% nickel. Sulfide based solid electrolyte, lithium metal. Very simple cell stack, very put together, you get higher energy density. So almost upwards of 470 watt hours per kilo and upwards of 1200 watt hours per liter. So the ceiling for our technology is much, much higher than lithium ion and a safer package. So that is solid power's technology in a nutshell.
Okay, so if we go back to, you got lithium metal in the anode, back to the future, back to really the original design. And you also have high nickel cathode. So let's talk about ultimately what is the lithium intensity. And you can frame that any way you want to, but really what we're trying to get to is this a lower lithium usage ultimately with lithium in two spots, as opposed to, well, it's actually in the electrolyte too. So how does that play out in terms of, talk about 100,000 cars or frame it any way you wish, but what's this mean for lithium use in terms of LCE? And then we'll get into the form of lithium again a little later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it all goes back to cell design for the, I would say, moderate to aggressive cell designs. We're looking at with pretty good plant efficiency. So when you make these batteries, you don't waste a ton of materials, or you don't have clippings or, coating runs that go awry. If all of that runs to plan, like, a good best in practice lithium ion facility today, we're looking at somewhere between 1.2 kilograms per kilowatt hour of LCE on the more modest or moderate side, and then all the way down to about 0.75 kilograms per kilowatt hour of LCE for the, I would say, more aggressive designs. So in terms of the cell specific capacities, you're looking at anything on the modest side of 380 up to about 470, 480 on the more aggressive cell design scenarios. And that would be watt hours per kilo.
And again, when you look at your commercialization timetable, because I don't want to assume everybody's listened to episode one. In what time frame are you looking at delivering that kind of cell?
Yeah. So the cell is going to precede commercialization. That's sort of how the automotive value or qualification process works. Like, you really have to have the cell working a few years before it's deployed in a vehicle. So you usually start with a pre-A or an A sample, and you progress all the way to D samples before you ever hit something like tens or hundreds of megawatt hours in production. So it would be maybe 2 to 3 years before that cell, that 480 watt hour per kilo cell is realized at smaller scale production, and then probably a few years to scale that up. So commercial introduction for electric vehicles, we're talking as soon as 5 years, but somewhere in the 5 to 9 year time frame.
Okay. So in the last few weeks since we previously spoke, you've had BYD's announcement. Well, that actually happened before we spoke, but then we have this whole story about Tesla using LFP with cell to pack, probably in China, and whether they go more broadly than that, who knows. Then we had another announcement on GM with their what they're called, the Ultimum.
NMPA.
And that's the, you know, adding aluminum, doping NMC with aluminum, basically. And that's supposed to be something that's significant, according to GM anyway. So let's hear your thoughts on those kind of changes to the current EV battery optionality, and you know, how does that play into how you think about this? Are you seeing those as just minor me too type changes, and it doesn't change the need to do what you're doing? I don't want to ask too much of a leading question, which I just did, but go ahead and give us your thoughts.
Yeah, well, we're still showing up to work here, so it hasn't impacted our strategy too much at Solid Power. I will say the LFP announcement caught me a little bit by surprise. We do have some people internally who've worked on LFP, and I went to their desks and started grilling them on the prospects of the technology and why Tesla would go towards LFP. But here's my opinion on it, which is LFP has got a pretty good capacity. You know, so it's maybe 20% lower than NMC 811. It's got lower voltage. So, you know, you're dropping your nominal voltage from 3.6 or 3.7 down to 3.2. So you take a fair hit both on voltage and capacity on a weight basis. But where you take the biggest hit is on volume. And the NMC tap density is closer to 3 grams per centimeter cubed or cubic centimeter, whereas LFP is much closer to 1. So if you think like, okay, you're, let's say, 40% or 30% worse on a weight basis, you're even worse than that, like much, much worse on that on a volume basis, because the particle itself isn't as dense. So volume is really crucial in LFP, which makes it much harder in an electric vehicle, because you have lower voltage, and let's say your motor, unless you run the motor at a lower voltage, if you want to achieve the same voltage, it means that you're going to have like 25% more serial connections. So a typical 400 volt pack has gone from, you know, 96 serial connections to maybe 125. I think it's actually closer to 110, but still more wiring costs. So the BYD and Tesla news, what I think is pretty notable about it is that they're talking about cell to pack. And that's sort of where this starts making sense to me, in the sense that your weight isn't as good, but you're much, much worse on volume. So the improvement needed is on getting a higher active ratio of cells together. So if you can bump up the active mass or the active volume in a pack, it makes that technology a little bit more palatable. That said, I think that these are really niche decisions. I don't see every OEM rushing into LFP over NMC. So I don't know if everyone's going to look at all of these factors and come to the same conclusion that, you know, a 10% savings on cost is worth pretty significant sacrifices on both mass, but particularly on volume.
Well, I viewed both announcements as niche plays. And, you know, given that LFP for everybody outside of China, LFP had pretty much been written off as a cathode some time ago, and the thought being that it would only be in buses and energy storage. I mean, this does give kind of a new, potentially a new life to the cathode in terms of if you get rid of the module, you have the space to have a better volumetric performance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess the question then becomes to what are the ultimate performance characteristics of the type of vehicles they're going to go into, and what are the cost savings? I also have a kind of a political thought here too. In the case of Tesla, they probably needed to work CATL into the program or some local battery maker in China. And given CATL, despite a lot of good press releases, their difficulties in actually bringing a high nickel cathode to fruition, this also may be part of a strategy to, you know, put the whole Tesla China operation into mm-hmm. acceptable supply chains to the government in Beijing. But that's just my kind of
running a theory, with, though. I had running with a thought. Before.
Well, you know, from time to time, we do conspiracy theories here on the Global Lithium Podcast. We try not to do it too often. But no, I mean, I think if you look at when Elon was on a podcast recently and said, hey, all the cells in China are coming from the U.S., I mean, that's not really how China likes these things to go.
And, yeah, especially since China, I mean, Tesla's the first non-JV for a foreign manufacturer.
Exactly. And I think they've given, because of the strength of the Tesla brand and some other factors, they've given Elon Musk more license than they've ever given anybody else. But I think that that chain has a length that isn't that long, and that, you know, Tesla's still going to have to play ball. That's just my thought. And I know I'll get a lot of Tesla lovers that are hating that, but hey, sorry. I guess that's the way we keep interest alive. But you mentioned the term pack.
Yeah.
And previously we talked about cells. And
yep.
When you look at Solid Power's business, are you just going to be making cells and letting whoever's buying them do the pack? How's that going to work?
Yeah, we have two main product or really strategic outlets for the company. One is on the material side. So we synthesize our own solid electrolytes in-house, and we're really starting to sample those externally and really explore creating a powder business for our solid electrolytes. So that's one. And then the second one is on the cells. So we are producing the cells in-house today. We don't expect to do that at the gigawatt hour scale. So that's another likely a strategic avenue for the business. In terms of going from cell to pack, that's really what we rely on our partners to do. Today we have public announcements with Ford and BMW, both of whom have done some preliminary work on pack design with respect to making a solid state pack be more competitive than a electric vehicle pack today. So if you look at an electric vehicle pack, and this goes, I think there's a lot of parallels actually to the LFP discussion we just had, which is that, if you look at solid state as a drop-in replacement for lithium ion, you're probably not going to capture the full benefits. So like LFP versus NMC, there's some safety benefits. With solid state, there should be significant safety benefits. And so if you look at, an Audi e-tron today, the pack has a lot of structural reinforcements, all Teslas too. They have the titanium, I think it's titanium plate on the bottom to protect the pack from being, protruded by a foreign object. There are structural elements at the module level making, controlling the structural elements of the pack. There's casings on the outside. So there's a lot of things that are not batteries in the pack today that may be able to go away if you have a safer cell. And then the other big one for us is that we don't need cooling. So our cells do not need to be cooled pretty much under any abuse situation, which is a major advantage when you're talking about thermal management of the pack. So you can probably just focus on heating the pack. And it's easier to heat than cool. And so in terms of the same concept for NMC to LFP, like how could you make that work today? You really have to get the active volume up. Well, if you go to a solid state pack, you may not need some of these passive volume elements today. So we should be more energy dense at the cell level, and we should be more energy dense at the pack level. And that's a positive feedback loop, which is really exciting. So, you know, you could conceivably see, you know, in addition to all the cell gains, you know, an additional 15 to 20% gains at the pack level in terms of just packing density.
Do you want to run the Global Lithium Podcast audience through a practical example? Take a easily divisible number of cars, let's say 100,000 cars.
Yeah.
Let's say 100 kilowatt hour battery.
Yeah.
And what would the LCE intensity with a solid state system the way you're discussing them, and basically compare it to something like a current Tesla, who is really the only people that have a large number of 100 kilowatt hour battery packs out there in cars to at this point in time?
Yeah, so let me finish that last part, maybe relevant to the real world math, right? If you're, let's say your Tesla, you're close to 250 watt hours per kilo today. At the pack level, you're at 180. If you implement, you know, a conservative solid power cell design, or maybe let's say a moderate solid power cell design, you're at 400 watt hours per kilo at the cell, and probably closer to maybe 320 at the pack level. So that means lighter packs, more efficient cars, more range per vehicle, and potentially smaller footprint for packs. Alternatively, you can keep the same footprint and go, you know, close to double the distance at that point. Or, you know, maybe at least 60, 70% more the distance. So that's, I hope, a tangible tangible feedback to the audience on how the cell to pack benefits are pretty significant with solid state. With respect to lithium intensity, right? So I with a modest cell design, we're looking at 1.2 kilograms per kilowatt hour. So I think that's maybe up to a 50% increase, 40 to 50% increase in lithium consumption on a LCE basis compared to, let's say, a best performing lithium ion today. But obviously you're getting a lot more, you're getting more for your lithium intensity in that effect, because you do have this longer range. You do have this higher energy density, which can translate into longer range vehicles. And then on the aggressive side, I think we can get down to about 0.75 kilograms per kilowatt hour LCE, which is probably on par with the best lithium ion today in terms of lithium consumption. So
yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, Tesla might give you a slightly lower number, but hey, it's close.
Yeah, and those numbers include, for anyone who operates lithium ion plants, about a 90% plant efficiency when it comes to materials. So that's a pretty high efficiency plant.
Yeah, but I think on the high end of the auto industry, that is basically, if you're not operating at that level, then you're probably not going to be in business very long. And I think if you look at Panasonic, Panasonic's doing better than that.
I believe it. Yeah, I mean, the when materials are 80% of your cost, you better not lose them in the process.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that's one of the big confusions that's always been out here. There's a lot of analysts that never worked in lithium and come in and look at whiteboard exercises that show 100% efficiency for everything and come up with very low lithium intensities, and then say, what could possibly be wrong with this? The math is right. And the math is right, and the thought process is wrong, because there's inefficiencies all the way through this process. You know, no matter how good you are, there are efficiency losses. So okay, we've covered a few of the points I wanted to cover, but because this is a lithium podcast, and because we've got a lot of people here who are, despite the bloodbath in the stock market today, are investors and are also trying to look at, you know, what's the lithium product of choice going to be 5 years down the road? And, you know, we have the big hydroxide versus carbonate argument now, which this LFP announcement gave all the carbonate people, you know, a feeling that, okay, maybe it is okay to make carbonate. But if we go to a solid state world, it's not necessarily true that either one of them are what you want, because you have to get the gateway chemical to metal. So what are your thoughts again on that subject? We did touch a little bit on this last time, but we have more time today.
So the exciting thing for all the lithium investors out there is, you know, I don't think you should pull your hair out yet, because the future for lithium is bright. I don't think lithium is going anywhere. If anything, consumption may be going up, and it's not just me that's saying it. Anyone who uses silicon anodes, they're going to use more lithium. So I am very bullish on lithium as basically the future of our transportation economy, particularly for passenger vehicles. So when we talk about solid power, if you think back to our cell stack, we start with NMC, 622, but up to very high concentrations of nickel. We have good results internally, up to 85% nickel. So that is typically a lithium carbonate or a lithium hydroxide, 622. And Joe, you're going to know this way better than I do, but 622 tends to be the border between those two. And then as you go to higher, above 60%, you typically start to prefer hydroxide in the process. So those are precursors on the cathode side, and we don't look that much different from lithium ion. On the solid electrolyte side, so both our catholyte and the separator electrolyte layer, they use a lithium-containing precursor called lithium sulfide. It's not a commonly known lithium chemical today. It's made at a fairly small scale today, and a big part of my job is getting it to a huge scale. So let's say in the aggressive cell design that I spoke about earlier, the 0.75 kilograms per kilowatt hour, that translates to about 1,750 tons of Li2S, the lithium sulfide, for 100,000 vehicles at 100 kilowatt hours per car. And then going down to the anode, there's a key decision-making point that will influence demand fairly significantly, which is, do you go with a deposited lithium metal anode, which means traditional current collector like copper with a lithium layer deposited on it through some form of deposition-based process, which would mean a lot less lithium on a mass basis is used for the same area because it's so thin. So that's option one. Option two would be freestanding lithium foil. And the limit there is basically how thin can you roll it. And it's rolled just like any other aluminum or copper foil. And the question is how thin can you roll it and still have it be handleable? Because lithium is super soft. And so lithium in its metal form is super soft. And so if we went with that product, the thinnest that you can get it today at a wide enough foil is maybe 20 microns. Typically, we like a little bit thicker than that, so maybe 35 microns versus the deposition route, which is 2 microns. So in terms of the difference in lithium consumption on a weight basis, that's like a factor of 18 difference between the two, or 17 and a half difference between the two. So it's a pretty significant difference between those two products. So with that said, we're looking at lithium consumption for 100,000 cars of metal, and this is coming from chloride, as you had previously spoken about. I think you can go from other lithium precursors, but today it's mostly done from chloride. That would be, 78 tons, not that much, frankly, for 100,000 vehicles if you're going with option one, the deposited product. Option two would be 690 tons of lithium metal. And I forgot to convert to carbonate. so that would be like 413 tons if for option one. And sorry if we're getting too deep in the math here. And 3,600 tons for option two for 100,000 cars. So, you know, it's not, which I'm saying here is 10 gigawatt hours of production. So from an LCE standpoint, we're not talking about zero numbers anymore, but it's still not, shouldn't be breaking breaking the market rules for lithium.
Well, I mean, I'll have to go back and you're the guy with the calculator in his hand, but it seemed to me like if you were going to do 100,000 cars, at 100 kilowatt hours, currently you'd be using about 80 kilograms per car to do that. And if you multiply that out, that seems like that's a pretty big number. And we can go back and, you know, to talk about the math later if we need to. I don't want this to become a kind of the Michael Bloomberg giving $100 million to everybody in America.
Oh man, that's pretty sad. Yeah, I hope I did not miss two zeros there, but I think I got that right. Okay. Lithium metal is super light.
We'll do the math later. I mean, what I want to get back to right now is when you talk about lithium sulfide, what processor are the people you're looking at using to make it? Assume they're not making it correct, and that they're either going through carbonate or, I mean, well, you can make it from the sulfate, but.
Right. So I think you nailed it, Joe. So there's two main ways that people have spoken about making lithium sulfide, and it's still in development today. No one is doing this beyond pilot scale quantities, but frankly, these are fairly easy processes to scale. So option one on the lithium sulfide would be hydroxide or carbonate reacted with H2S to form, which, you know, H2S is not the easiest gas to work with. It is fairly deadly. But frankly, you know, it's not, that's more of an engineering challenge. You need to be careful with how you use it. But fortunately, lithium hydroxide scrubs H2S better than most materials. So that reaction, you know, really wants to happen. And so
we all live.
We all live. It is done. It has been done. I'm sure it's not in any way, you know, it really shouldn't be, it shouldn't be a nasty process, basically.
So what's process two?
Just one more thing on option one. Option one is done. Basically, H2S scrubbing is how the oil and gas industry survives today. I mean, they have a lot of H2S generated, so they have to do H2S scrubbing. And so we could literally insert lithium hydroxide into an oil refinery and make a product from something that otherwise would just be a cost to an oil refiner. So it's an interesting dynamic between electric vehicles and the oil and gas industry. Option two would be like a carbothermal reduction route. And so in that case, you react at high temperature carbon with lithium sulfate, and then you generate lithium sulfide from that process.
Okay. Well, let's go back to the, you know, the thinness of the lithium on the substrate. Given the significant difference between what you can do with a foil and what you could do with deposition, so how do you feel about, you know, 5 years from now, are you going to be able to get, is there a deposition process that you've seen that you like?
Yes. Yeah, we're close to matching the same performances in deposition-based products as with freestanding lithium metal foils, and we have a lot more experience with freestanding lithium metal foils. So the fact that the gap is so close is pretty promising. How thin can you go? That's something that we're still trying to figure out. You know, can you? I don't think you can go lower than a micron. You know, there is sort of a trade-off in performances between, you know, there is such thing as being too thin on the lithium side. And so that's frankly what we're trying to figure out right now, is what should be the ideal lithium product at scale. More than anything, it's cost, cost and handleability. So whatever is going to get the cheapest route is going to be the method that will procure at large scale.
When, if you had to guess, unless you know, in either case, tell me, when would you think you would know that outcome? 3 years from now? 5 years from now? Next week?
Yeah, I think it's probably closer to 1 to 2.5 years from now.
Okay.
And it's a little bit, we are not a lithium metal supplier. We don't really have plans to get into the lithium metal business. There's a lot of room for cost cutting today.
Absolutely.
And so it's a little bit, we're going to work with partners to define the product, and then we're also going to push them, and hopefully they'll be pushed internally as well to at least get the plans in place to get this to scale.
When you look at the big lithium companies, there isn't a lot of metal capacity involved. So this is going to be probably somebody enters this field that has better technology than currently exists today. Because I think we talked about this on the last episode, that lithium metal production is kind of in a 100-year-old, for the most part, looking setup. If you went into a lithium, I'm assuming you've been in lithium metal plants. I think I've been to just about every one that exists. And there's a lot of kind of Charles Dickens vibe when you go in there. And to do the things you want to do, I think you need to at least move into the 1990s, if not the 2020s, to do that. I don't know what your experience has been looking at metal, or if you're just getting the foils and not haven't gone back up the supply chain. But there's a lot of room for improvement, is all I'm saying.
Yep. Yeah, so I think we still, at 100,000 cars, I don't think we put such a huge dent in metal production that I we're definitely bumping up metal production, don't get me wrong, but I don't think... it's not like a 10x bump in capacity. Metal is produced at a decent rate today, thanks to primaries, thanks to things like aluminum lithium composites. So
you've got Ganfeng with 1,500 tons of lithium metal capacity, and after that, you know, the next five guys probably equal their capacity. The next four guys probably equal their capacity. So it's not a, right now it's not an attractive business. So there isn't a lot of energy being put into improving the lithium metal production processes. So it's going to take something like this and some creative minds to get you where you need to be. But
yep.
That's why
we're on the podcast today. To anyone listening, we're definitely there needs to be innovation in the space, and it doesn't just start at the post processing and what we would procure here at Solid Power, but it really starts at the materials in the ground. So I think a whole soup to nuts revisiting is worth it, and frankly the opportunity is there. It's not just solid state looking at, it's not just solid power looking at lithium metal. It's really pretty much all advanced batteries. I mean, even like 2 years ago in the Tesla shareholder presentation, someone in the audience asked Elon Musk, you know, what's it going to take to double the energy density? He basically said lithium metal. So it is the lightest metal. It really is phenomenal. It just, we're going to need to get a second industrial push to get it into cars.
Yeah, I'm in no way denigrating what the people that are currently making the Gangfins of the world. It's just they've done what was cost effective for them for the quality of product they needed, because the biggest use of lithium metal is not in single use batteries. It's as a catalyst to be the feedstock to make butyllithium, to make polymers, and to make pharmaceuticals. And you know what they've done has been good enough, and we're getting to it. It's almost the analogy to take the Atacama and take the lithium carbonate they produced. And when they designed those plants, they didn't design them for battery material. They designed them to meet an industrial conceived spec. Mm-hmm. And they've got to get a lot better, as if we've seen some of the upsets that you've seen between SQM and Albemarle not being able to meet their targets down there. And it's, it applies to others, but the whole lithium industry has to up their game quality-wise for a reasonable level of EV implementation. And most people really still aren't getting that. So
yeah, and my hope, this is maybe I'm waxing poetic here, is that maybe
hope. Tell me your hopes, your dreams, your aspirations.
I think we started the podcast on some of those. My hope is that maybe quality doesn't matter as much. Maybe you can design processes that have some form of filtration step in there, where sodium concentration or magnesium what would effectively be contaminants today can be handled in the processes. And so that is certainly something that when I think about the future supply chain of going into what ends up with a very high spec material by the time it enters your battery may not have started out as high spec. So that is maybe.
But that's really just a change in processing. I mean, that's taking the impurities out in the back end, which in lithium has never, ever worked very well. Maybe somebody comes up with something to make it work well. But my point is you still need the quality of the lithium in the battery. Whether you procure a product that's not as high quality as you want to, and your process eliminates the last mile of stuff you don't want, there's still a quality concern out there. I think that I've been banging the drum that quality matters for a long time, and people still tend to fixate on tons produced, not quality tons produced. So
right.
Anyway, I'll get off the soapbox. And
I appreciate it. I don't, if there was higher quality available, it definitely does not hurt. That is for sure.
Okay. So
that,
is there,
I lift all boats.
Is there anything else you would like to convey to the listeners about where Solid Power is going? Anything? Because if not, I'm going to ask you the classic rapid fire question.
Well, a comment. So I think we hit a lot on what Solid Power is doing, right? I mean, we energy density and safety. We use similar processes to lithium ion, and then the benefits don't just stop at the cell; they go to the pack. So I think hopefully, and we have some. We need some lithium, right? We need lithium in our electrolyte that doesn't exist today at scale in Li2S, and we need lithium on the anode side that's gonna be cost effective at scale. The volumes on the lithium metal aren't going to rewrite the rules, at least initial commercialization of lithium metal demand, but they are significant, and they require an industrial push, really, that I would say that we're just starting to see the seeds in place today on. One quick comment earlier on your the GM Ultium design is, no one's really talked about how big those cells are. So like going from the LFP For example, going with Tesla from going from a cylindrical to a prismatic with LFP to get some of the packaging benefits. GM is going not with a prismatic cell, but with some absolutely enormous pouches. They're, I think, like 550 millimeters by about 100 millimeters by 10 millimeters, which is about the absolute upper limit of a pouch cell. And they are not easy to make when they're that big. So that is truly an engineering, it's an engineering challenge. And if it works, it's an engineering marvel. So that's just one comment that I had on GM that I don't know if I mentioned earlier.
No, you didn't. And I appreciate that because we kind of skipped over direct comments on the GM plan. All right. Well, as you take that last pull on your water bottle, this is the classic rapid fire question. You can have two people from any historic eon or today, anybody that ever lived or is living now, you have two of them to dinner. Who do you pick and why?
Yep. Well, the nerd in me and certainly the teenager in me would say Richard Feynman. I would love to hear his thoughts on the challenges we face in the battery industry. He was a guy who certainly he understood first principles thinking probably better than anyone. And he, I think the lesson I learned from reading his books and reading a little bit more about some of the work that he's done is he really starts every thought process with, like, what do you know? And really takes that down to its core philosophy. So definitely Richard Feynman, batteries and electric vehicles were not really a thing, but I would love to hear his thoughts on what is the potential for where we can go, and are we thinking about
who is the third person at this Frankel Feynman dinner?
Yeah, well, that was person number one. So obviously, I'm person zero. Person one is Richard Feynman. Person two, I don't know if I've had as much thought on, but maybe I'll go with the runner in me and choose Steve Prefontaine. Because I think that would be an interesting dynamic between Richard Feynman and Steve Prefontaine. But yeah, that's person two. He was stubborn, ran very hard, didn't want to listen to people externally, but when he was finally convinced, he knew which way to go. Yeah. So that's the
pre-died before you were born, buddy.
I mean, I
you
feel like
the movie,
every,
though. No, yeah. I mean, Prefontaine resonates with me too.
Yeah,
runner side. You get in Bill Bowerman and Shoe Dog and all those people. All right, good choices. I don't know. Anyway, so we're gonna bring this episode of the Global Lithium Podcast to a close. Thank you very much for your time today, Dean, and to Solid Power for their time. We're a little sad that Will did not show up in his white shirt. Is he still wearing white shirts, by the way, or is he?
He's still dressing overly formal. We're breaking him in.
I know that you didn't get him on camera today, so Will, we miss you. We had a rapid fire question for you too, but hey, maybe next time. Anyway, Dean, thank you very much for
being
on the podcast. We appreciate it. And with that, I'm going to say good night and good luck.
Thank you for listening to my conversation with Dean Frankel. As I wrap this up, on the day of the biggest drop in history of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and at the end of several days of bloodletting in the stock market, I guess I just want to tell people that I don't give investing advice, but I think we're getting to the point now where there's going to be some great opportunities to buy great companies at much more attractive values than have been recently available. I bought stock today. Didn't buy any lithium stocks today, but I did buy some stocks today. One particular stock was one that I had tripled my money in over the last couple of years. Sold 3 weeks ago. It's $6.58 and bought it today at $4.52 because I just think with that drop in price, it is again a compelling value. You know, like everybody else, I'm not happy to see the dollar amounts in my various brokerage accounts get compressed, but I don't know. I've been through this many times before, going back to October of 87 when I was an analyst for an oil company and watched most of the much more highly compensated people around me pull their hair out when we had that the crash back then. And I've been through a few other very dark days in the markets. So again, not stock advice, not investing advice, but if I was going to give advice, I would probably tell people to keep their powder dry, and it's probably going to be a good time to pick up some value in the very near future. And with that, I will say, see you next time.